report. There we go. And the learning today is dedicated Le'ilui Nishmat in memory of Eliyahu ben Ephraim, Zichrono Livracha. Okay. So, we've been learning Shmuel Aleph Perek Yitzayin, chapter 17, and the story of David, Shaul, Goliath, the Plishtim, and the last bit that we did was the threat or offer that Goliath makes to the Jews. Are you able to hear me all right? I can see that the signal is still going back and forth, but you're able to hear me. Okay. I might at some point just turn off my video as a way to make it, the signal lighter, but we'll see. The offer that he made, that Goliath made, was, I am a Plishti, your servants of Shaul, send out somebody who's going to fight me, and if I win, you guys have to serve the Plishtim, and if the Jew wins, then the Plishtim will have to serve you. And we noted that there were those who interpreted this as a formal challenge to a duel. It will spare lives, you don't have to fight a war. Abarbanel thought that that's ridiculous. He said that's something that people do in the event that they have a dispute. There's something in doubt and they can't prove one way or the other, so they let God be the arbiter. That doesn't make any sense here. Further, he said a duel requires a written formal set of agreed upon rules. It requires participants of equal standing and equal weapons. It requires referees. None of that is going on here. Not to mention, after David kills Goliath, the Plishtim don't become the slaves of the Jews. That's not the way it works at all. So Abarbanel says that's not what's going on here at all. Malbim disagrees and says, no, that's exactly what this was. Then why wasn't it conducted as a duel? Because David didn't accept the deal. This was what Goliath was offering. David didn't accept it. Okay. The last point, though, that we did last time was to introduce the following question. What does Goliath, whatever, however you want to pronounce his name, what does he represent? And our first approach was to say that he is the embodiment of the Plishtim. He's the embodiment of the Philistines. He said in 17:8, right? If you go back to the text itself, he introduced himself by saying, where was it? Hallo anochi haplishti. He says, I am the Philistine. So, literally. Now, you could take it, as some commentators did, as saying, I am just a simple Philistine. But he says, I am a Philistine. I am the Philistine. Further, we saw Targum Yonatan, which is a very important Aramaic commentary to the text, which said that he's not only the Philistine now, he has been their lead warrior all along. In all of the battles that the Jews had with the Plishtim in this book, remember, this is war number 4, he has been the lead Philistine. I was the one who killed the sons of Eli. I was the one who took the Aron, and so on. That was one approach. The major challenge with that approach is just that if he's been there all along, why is he only being mentioned now? Why didn't we see him? This is war number 4. So where have you been? So I'd like to float another idea. And that is that Goliath is being presented to us not only as a representative of the Philistines, but as the opposite of David HaMelech, the opposite of King David. Where King David is somebody of Vahashem Imo, God is with him, he is a rejecter of God. Which is why he's only named now in the book. He may have been there in the previous wars, but it's only when he's going up against David, against King David, that we have a concern for his identity. In what ways are David and Goliath opposites? What would you say?
Didn't hear you. Good question.
Yeah, we love...
Okay, so I'm going to turn off my video and see if that helps. In what ways are David and Goliath opposites?
Size
is a big factor here, for sure. What else? Based on what you've seen described already in the text.
Choice of armor and weapons.
Choice of armor and weapons, right? Goliath has the, both in terms of defensive armor and in terms of weapons, he's got everything. And of course, you know the story. David is going to have a slingshot, 5 stones. Not just that, he's going to be offered armor and he's going to reject it. So they're opposites in that regard.
David's going to have faith in God, putting his faith in God, whereas putting his faith in himself.
Right. They are opposites in their relationship with God. True. And then there's another point, which we'll see the Talmud really play up, which is that they are opposites in terms of their ancestry. This is always fascinating. Now, here we're going to do something which is going to confuse a lot of people. And I apologize in advance for being confusing. But I feel like it's necessary to go through this text and see if we can get it. So we'll see. We'll see how this plays out. Take a look, please, at source number 1 on your sheet. Passage from the Talmud. This is the major discussion in the Talmud about David and Goliath. It's found in the Masechta called Sota. It's Sota Mem Beis Amud Beis 42b. And the text begins by pointing to a verse in which we refer to somebody. Sorry? Yes, Susan.
Please mute us because we keep jumping to other people and they make noise.
Oh.
Please mute us.
You got it. You're all muted.
They make noise.
Okay. You should all be muted. Thank you. It's really, I think, an artifact of my connection, which I wish were better, but this is what I have right now. Does everyone have source 1 on the sheet? Okay. So the text here tells you about somebody named Harapha. We're going to see who Harapha is. We're going to come back to who Harapha is. But right now, take a look at source number 1. It is written Harapha, and it is written Orpah. You know what? I think it actually does need to be. We have to go in the opposite order. Sorry. Take a look at source number 2, please. Then we're going to come back to source number 1. This will work better. So take a look at source number 2 from Shmuel Bet, Samuel 2, chapter 21. This passage presents us a description of warriors of King David fighting against the Philistines. And I'm using the JPS translation here. It reads most smoothly. And that's what we're going to go with. So take a look at the English. I'm going to read out the English. You have the Hebrew there as well. Again, war broke out between the Philistines and Israel. And David and the men with him went down and fought the Philistines. David grew weary, and Ishbi-benov tried to kill David. He, Ishbi-benov, was a descendant of the Rapha. Now, if those of you who can see the Hebrew, take a look in the Hebrew. It says, Ishbi-benov, it's Pasuk Tet Zayin, sentence 16, V'Ishbi-benov asher b'lidei ha-Rapha. Ishbi-benov is among the children of either somebody named Harapha or of the Rapha. Who is this fellow Ishbi-benov? Well, look at this description. His bronze spear weighed 300 shekel. He wore new armor. But Abishai, son of Tsruya, came to the aid of King David. He attacked the Philistine and killed him. It was then that David's men declared to him an oath, "You shall not go with us into battle anymore, lest you extinguish the lamp of Israel." After this, fighting broke out again with the Philistines at Gov. And that was when another fellow, Sibchai the Hushatite, killed Saf, a descendant again of the Rapha. Again, there was fighting with the Plishtim at Gov. And Elchanan, son of Yaor Gim, the Bethlehemite, killed Goliath the Giti, whose spear had a shaft like a weaver's bar. So apparently there's a Goliath of God who got killed by somebody else here named Elchanan. Is everyone able to follow? It's hard with my computer jumping. Once again, there was fighting at Gath. There was a giant of a man who had 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot, 24 in all. He too was descended from the Rapha. When he taunted Israel, Jonathan, the son of David's brother Shimei, killed him. Those 4 were descended from the Rapha in Gath, and they fell by the hands of David and his men. So what can you tell me, based on what we just read, about the sons of the Rapha? What are you getting here?
That they were giants?
That they were giants. These are fearsome people. Some of them have 6 fingers and 6 toes. Right? So, this text says to me that there is a set of giants who fight on the side of the Philistines, including somebody named Goliath. And they are the sons of Harapha. Well, that's really interesting. By the way, in case you're wondering, that this fellow Goliath gets killed by somebody named Elchanan, right? Son of Ya'or or Gim. What in the world is that about? That's something we actually talked about at one point last year. But I don't know if it's necessarily remembered by everybody, so I'm representing it here. Take a look at source number 3, please. Targum Yonatan, Aramaic commentary to the verse in which we are told about Goliath being killed by Elchanan, son of Ya'or or Gim. Read that, my English translation of the Aramaic. And there was another battle with the Philistines in Gov. And David, son of Yishai, weaver of the curtain of the temple, from Bethlehem killed Goliath of Gath, and the wood of his spear was like a weaver's bar. In other words, Elchanan, son of Ya'or or Gim of Beit Lechem, is another name for David ben Yishai. We talked about this then, the idea that Yishai was a weaver of curtains for the Beis HaMikdash, for the Mishkan, for the tabernacle of the Jews at the time. But the point here, and the reason why I bring this, and I'm going to try my video again because the signal seems to be stabilizing. So we'll see what happens. So what we seem to be getting here in source number 2 is a passage from the book of Shmuel, later on, much later on, Shmuel Bet, chapter 21, in which we learn that the Philistines have 4 giants, including Goliath, who are the sons of Rapha, or Harapha. And now we're ready to go back to source number 1, which says, who in the world is this Harapha? What does that mean? It is written Harapha, and it is written Orpah. In other words, same person. Rav and Shmuel had a debate. One of them said her real name was Harapha, but she also gets called Orpah. And the other one said no, her real name was Orpah, and then there was another reason why she was called Harapha. I'm skipping the lines in the Talmud about why she would have one name or the other. I'm going to come back and explain that. But the point right now is that they're telling you Harapha is somebody named Orpah. Who was Orpah? Who is Orpah? My internet connection is unstable again. Sorry? Yeah, no, I turned off the video again. The idea is, indeed, that Harapha is Orpah. Orpah, who was daughter-in-law of Naomi, sister-in-law of Ruth. Naomi and Elimelech had the 2 sons, Mahlon and Kilion. They moved to Moab during the famine. Ruth is married to one. Orpah is married to the other. Both of them lose their husbands. And Elimelech dies as well. And Naomi wants to come back to Israel. And she tells Ruth and Orpah, I got nothing for you. You shouldn't come back with me. Moabites, you know, certainly are not going to do very well in Israel. Better for you to go find your fortunes elsewhere. And they both say, no, we want to be with you. And she insists, and Orpah says, okay. And Orpah kisses her and cries, and that's it, leaves. Whereas Ruth insists and goes back with her, and the rest of the story is the rest of the story. So that's who Harapha is, according to the Gemara. Harapha is Orpah, and her descendant is Goliath, is Goliath. Isn't that fascinating? David and Goliath, Ruth and Orpah in a new generation. Now here, I will come back to the parts that I skipped in the text, because I skipped them to be delicate. Basically, what the text does in the Talmud there, in source number one, is the view that says her name is really Harapha reads the name Orpah as an insult to the lineage of Goliath, saying that he came from impropriety. And the version that says her real name was Orpah reads the word Harapha also as an allusion to impropriety in his lineage. In other words, what they're doing here is saying Goliath comes from illegitimacy. That's really what they're trying to do. And he comes from Orpah, who is the one who left. Now, there's more to see here. Take a look at source number one. Yes, Janine.
Isn't that the wrong nation? I mean, they're not Plishtim, that's Moab. What was Goliath doing fighting for Plishtim?
What would you think? You're right. So what would you think?
Hired hand, I guess.
Either hired hand.
Right. Mercenary.
Either a hired hand, or she went off and found herself among the Plishtim. There was nothing doing in Moab. I mean, it's...
Yeah. Right, what do you mean by illegitimate? I mean, you don't...
So I'm skipping what the Talmud actually said, but it involves a mess in terms of his paternity.
Okay.
It's not pretty. Ruth, you were going to say something? Okay. So yeah, she ends up apparently in Moab, among the Plishtim, or it's just that he's a hired hand, although he calls himself the Plishti. So it makes it more likely that the answer was that, the paternal side ends up being Philistine. But I want to go back to this Gemara because it has more to say. So keep on reading back in source number one. They quote you the verse that we read. These four were born to Harapha in Gath. They fell into the hand of David and into the hand of his servants. Who were they? Who are the four? Sir of Chizda said, Saph, Madon, Goliath, and Ishbi Benov. And they fell into the hand of David and to the hand of his servants. For it is written, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, and Ruth clung to her. Rabbi Yitzchak said, God said, let the descendants of the kissed one fall into the hands of the descendants of the clinging one. Arpa's descendants will fall into the hands of Ruth, because Arpa kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, and Ruth stayed with her. But Rava said, as a reward for the four tears Arpa cried for her mother-in-law, she merited, and four warriors came from her. As it says, when she parted ways, they raised their voices, and they cried further. So Orpah gets rewarded for having wanted to stay with Naomi. So the picture here is that the picture here is that they are opposites in form, they are opposites in weaponry, they are opposites in heritage, and they are opposites in their relationship with God. When Goliath gave his speech, he quoted no allegiance to any god. David, on the other hand, is going to talk all about Hashem saving him. Interestingly, David is going to claim later in the chapter that Goliath blasphemed the God of Israel. Goliath does not actually invoke any god until he actually faces David in sentence 43. It's going to take them a very long time to get there. However, the Talmud says, no, there's something earlier that you missed. Go back in the text, please, to chapter 17, sentence 8.
I was actually going to ask about that, I think.
Go for it, Jeanette.
The fact that he said you're Avdei Sha'ul?
Yeah.
I thought that was weird.
Okay, I hear that, Avdei Sha'ul instead of Avdei Hashem, but what else in this sentence is interesting? He says, Beru lachem ish, choose an ish for yourself. If you could jump on the source sheet to source number 6. You see that? Source number 6. Also from the same passage in Sota, but commenting on the name Goliath. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, She'amad begilui panim lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The word Goliath means galui. Galui means exposed. He stood with an exposed face before God. An exposed face is like the phrase in English, a bald-faced lie, like that kind of thing. It means he was brazen. How was he brazen to God? Shenamar, because it says, Beru lachem ish v'yeirei de'elai. He said, choose an ish for yourselves, and let him descend to me. And the Talmud says, Ein ish el HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ish is only a reference to God, because we're told, Hashem ish milchama. God is an ish milchama, a warrior. So the idea is that he was saying, let your God come and fight me. To which God's response is to send David, because David was introduced to us, or is introduced to us, as V'David ben Ish Ephrati Hazeh. He is the son of this Ish of Ephraim. You follow? So Goliath is being presented as an opponent of Hashem. And thereby that's also part of him being the opposite of David. There's more. Yes, Ethi. So ish can mean man. However, we use the term ish, like Hashem ish milchama, as a reference to God. You're right. We often use it to mean man. Yeah, it's not.
In the Tanakh, it says, let him come down and fight me. So it's tell that he was calling on somebody above him.
Right. So I wondered if somebody might pick up on that. The thing is, they're on mountains, and he's down Ish HaBeinayim in the middle. So, yeah, it's a clever thing to read into, but I'm not so sure. But Ethi, we use the term Ish at times to refer to angels. In Daniel, we do it in a few different places. So,
okay, so if he wanted to say, send me a man, what words would he have used?
He could have said Adam.
Ish is also used many times as an important person. The Shmuel begins by Ish Mirab Tayim Sufim.
Correct.
I think it's in Shmot when Moshe's father takes his mother, Yocheved.
Mm-hmm.
Vayikach Ishmi, I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, no, you are correct. You are correct. Ishmi Beit Levi. Ethi is correct that on a literal level, the word ish could just be read as just another word, but they're fitting it into a greater picture about Goliath, and specifically the fact that David accuses him of blaspheming God, and we don't see that he has done so. So we're looking. What is it that David is interpreting here? There are other things that you could say, but this is certainly one of them. So what I'm trying to get across here, and I apologize for the poor signal that's making it harder to be able to communicate, but it's not just that Goliath is the embodiment of the Plishtim, he's also the opposite of King David. And we're going to see more of that coming in a little bit. We're not done with that theme. Susan.
If we say we go back to this Oprah,
Orpah.
If we
Two different people.
I'm sorry, Orpah, that he was not a Plishti, then why does he say, I am a Plishti?
Who said he's not a Plishti?
But his father was a Plishti.
His father was, yeah.
In other words, his mother...
Right. No, there's a...
So by now he's a Plishti.
Yes, that is correct.
Can you say it again? You popped...
I just said you're correct. He is a Plishti from his father's side.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
One other note on this story that I think is important to catch is that Shaul, by the way... If you're curious, on your sheet, I also brought you source 4 and source number 5. These deal with the whole back and forth about who killed Goliath and about this fellow Elchanan and David, and it's a fascinating read, but it's the sort of thing I would only try if I had a good signal to be able to communicate. When you can't communicate, you have to know it and just cut bait on certain things. So the number 4 is the account of the 4 sons of Orpah in Divrei HaYamim, in Chronicles, and then the Malbim's explanation for it. It's a good read, but it's not going to work for us right now. The other piece that I wanted to note for you, just because I don't think I ever said it clearly in this conversation, is that the literal read of Harapha is that these are the 4 sons of the population called the Rapha, like Rifa'im. That's the literal read of this word. And it's drash to say Harapha is Arpa. You follow? Is that clear? I'm getting some heads nodding yes. That's a good sign.
Why would it be Rifa'im if that's with an aleph, isn't it? Like,
so, yeah, the answer is that if you take a look at, I believe I brought you the full text. Yeah, if you take a look at Divrei HaYamim in source number 4, the first verse I brought you there. Do you see that? In the Hebrew. Yeah. Vahi achrechein. It was after that. Vatamod milchama begezer in Plishtim. There's a war with the Philistines in Gezer. Az hika sibchai hachushati es sipai milidei harifaim. Vayikaneu. So the text makes it actually a pretty clear explanation, a pretty clear association. And then, still in that paragraph, take a look at the end of sentence 6, Pasuk Vav, and tell me how Harapha is spelled.
With an aleph.
Bingo. So that's the thing. It's, you know, the literal is, she is, it's not she. It's, they are the 4 sons of the Rifa'im. Which makes sense, because the Rifa'im are a fearsome and mighty nation. They come up a lot in Chumash. Okay. One other important note here. And that is Shaul. So, we've already seen, going back to chapter 16, that Shaul is no longer Shaul. Shaul has begun to deteriorate. Once the Ruach Hashem is associated with David, it's no longer associated with Shaul, and it's bad news. And David is playing music for him that we saw already before. But you can also see it here. Take a look at chapter 17, sentence 2, please. Shaul and the Jewish army, Ish Yisrael, Eti, are all gathered and camped in the Amek. They're camped in the valley, right? And they're ready to fight against the Plishtim, against the Philistines. Then we get the description of the actual Philistines and Goliath specifically. And what's Shaul's response? What do you see? Sorry?
His response to the challenge?
Yeah.
What's the question? His response to the challenge?
Correct.
He's scared.
Yeah,
look at sentence 11.
He doesn't want to fight.
Vayishma Shaul v'chol Yisrael es divrei ha'plishti ha'elech. Shaul and all Israel hear the Philistines. Vayechatu vayireu me'od. And they are afraid. Now, look on your source sheet at the comment made by the Malabar. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd be afraid. But take a look at source number 7. From the Malbim. V'sha'ul v'ish Yisrael, Sha'ul and the Jewish men, their hearts lacked the confidence to chase them, the Philistines, from Socho at the start of their gathering. And they also feared drawing near to them. They only gathered in Emek Ha'elah, far from Socho. The Jewish army does not have the will to go fight the Plishtim. This is why the Philistines left Socho to Ephes Damim to draw close to the Israelite camp and not the reverse. It's not the Jews coming to them, it's them coming to the Jews. This shows the heart of Israel had melted, and this is before Goliath. Goliath hasn't even shown up. You follow?
Rabbi?
Yes. Yes?
But, okay, because I read my commentaries, and it's Rashi said that he was...
So don't give... Wait, Susan. Susan. Hang on.
He's saying he fought in all these other fights.
Susan. Can you hear me? The signal thing is really bad. All right. So, two things. Number one, we'll get to the Rashi. Everybody here is frozen and I'm frozen. This isn't going very well. Hold on one second. I want to see if I have another option here. Hang on.
We hear you.
You hear me?
We are hearing 90% of the time.
Okay.
Very, very rarely you cut out. But
okay.
90%.
Okay. All right. So Susan, going back to what you were saying, in terms of the other commentaries, we're going to go there. We're not done just from seeing this Malbim. But what was your question that you were asking about Goliath having been in the other wars?
Well, when I read the commentaries, it said that when he stands up there and says Ha'ish, it says that he had fought all these other battles, so Semi found somebody was ruined. It says here, I lost where it said it, but I just read it where it said, oh, here. And that which is stated, I can't find it, but it said that he had fought before Goliath. Like, this wasn't his first battle. He's saying, I fought you here and I fought you there.
Yeah.
Here it is. I finally found it.
Right, but what are you saying?
So I'm saying when Goliath said, when what we're reading, it's not his first time. They should have, that they knew there was going to be a giant. Like they, if,
right.
What the,
so if I take, right.
Then he shouldn't have been a surprise.
Right. If I take the Medrash that Targum Yonatan brings, that he had fought before, then I agree with you that they knew before, they knew him already before. The new element here is simply the challenge of send somebody out to fight me one-on-one. That would be the new element. But it's true, then there would be no element of surprise. But the idea here, and the point that I wanted to stress, is that within the read that we talked about two sessions ago, when we asked, how much time lapsed between chapter 16 and elapsed between chapter 16 and chapter 17, and we said they're right on the heels of each other, and therefore the Jews just routed the Plishtim, they just routed the Philistines, and yet now they're in fear. That's really stark, and it says a lot about Shaul. And not only that, but Rashi believes Goliath knows. Take a look at source number 8. Eti, this will make you happier. We said, the Gemara said, Beru lachem ish, choose an ish for yourself. So that he's challenging God. Rashi brings you a different take. Beru lachem ish, choose an ish, Shaul. He's saying, send me Shaul, v'yered Eli, and he will descend to me. Which makes sense. Shaul is the ish. As somebody commented before, I think it might have been Shoshana, The term Ish is used for people of importance. But not just that. Don't stop with that. Go back to chapter 9, sentence 1, when Shaul was introduced. Chapter 9, sentence 1.
Ish mi Binyamin.
Ish. Shaul is the Ish. Right? And ain Ish tov mimenu. Add that in. So Shaul is the Ish. That's what Rashi is registering here. That Shaul is indeed an Ish, and that what Goliath is saying is, send me your king. Let him fight me. And now I come back to the question that Jeanette asked before. What is this business of you are servants of Shaul? So Abarbanel and Malbim have this whole philosophical idea about whether the Plishtim were democratic and the Jews were serving a king. It's an interesting idea, but it's not where most of the commentators go, and I think it's hard to support in the text. Rather, look at instead what the other commentators say about this challenge. Targum Yonatan, in source number 9, he says, I'm going to read out my translation. And you, Israelites, what great deed has Shaul, son of Kish, of Gibeah, done for you, such that you appointed him as king over you? If he's a mighty person, let him descend and fight me. And if he's a weak person, choose a man for yourself, and he shall descend to me. He's not interested, evidently, in being ruled by a woman. But the statement that Goliath makes is, not just, you are slaves of Shaul. You are slaves of Shaul, let him fight me. And if he can't fight me, why do you serve him? Rashi has a similar read. And then take a look at Radak, who has a little bit of a different approach, but it conveys the same negativity about Shaul. Take a look at source number 10. Halo anochi haplishti. I am the Philistine. Klomar, meaning, ani plishti echad min haplishtim. I am a Philistine, one of the Philistines. V'yatzasi me'atzmi k'dei hilachem, and I'm doing this on my own. I'm here to fight you. Ve'atem, and you, avadim l'Shaul, you are servants of Shaul, klomar, meaning, kevan sheyesh lachem melech, since you have a king, haya lachem malkechem levor mikem ishli lachem alai, imi, sorry, you and your king should pick somebody to fight me. Why is your king not doing anything? He says, you servants of Shaul, where is he? Not to mention, Rav Bazak points out, fascinating point, Goliath. What is the outstanding trait that we know about Goliath?
His height.
He's taller than everybody. Who else is taller than everybody?
Shaul
was introduced to us with an emphasis on that. Nobody is as tall as Shaul among the Jews. And also, ain ish tov mimenu. But the point then is, Goliath is taunting Shaul. The Plishtim are aware of Shaul's deterioration. And that answers our question of why they're attacking now so soon after they were defeated. The answer is because they know that the Jewish king is vulnerable. That's the idea. And Rav Baz... Sorry?
Can he not also be saying, now you're avadim of Shaul, but if when I beat you, you're going to be our avadim?
It's possible. Certainly a reasonable read.
But how does he know that Shaul is weak?
So that's the big question, to which the answer likely is espionage. No, think about it. You have the servants of the king's court out there looking for musicians to go play music for him because he's depressed. How long do you think it takes before people find out? But let's add one more dimension. Rav Bazak, in number 11, I gave you a reference to his article. You can find the article online. David Goliath Chelek Aleph. He's got three on this story. So look what I wrote there. Compare this, first of all, to what we already did, the comparison from the beginning of chapter 9. But now let's go back to chapter 11 after Shaul has been appointed king, but there are a lot of people who don't accept him. Do you remember the next story? There's a fellow by the name of Nachash, king of Ammon, who says to the people of Yabesh Gilad that they are going to have to, well, he says they're going to have to knock out their right eye, right? And the people of Yabesh Gilad appeal to Shaul for help, right? They appeal for help, or they appeal, they're crying in general, I should say. Shaul finds out. And then look at chapter 11, sentence 6. Vatitzlach ruach Elokim al Shaul. Shaul has the spirit of God. Hashem is manifest, his divine inspiration, ruach HaKodesh. Bishamo as hadrim ha'ela, when he hears these words, vayichar apo me'od. And he is furious. And he takes his cattle, and he cuts up the cattle, and he sends a message with the pieces. We talked all about that. It's a while ago already. Saying, anybody who doesn't follow me and Shmuel to war, this is what's going to happen to his cattle. He rallies everybody to fight against Ammon. And the stories are very interesting, because both of them have a period of time when nothing happens. There it was 7 days. In the story in our chapter, it's 40 days. And salvation comes out of somebody unexpected, Shaul. In our story also, it will come from somebody unexpected. But it's going to come from David, not from Shaul. Shaul doesn't act. Yes, Leona. Leona, you have to unmute. Leona, you got to unmute or we can't hear you.
Okay, I wanted to ask, was the last time that they fought the Philistines, was that the time that we had Yonatan saving the day and they all went in and victorious about it? And the Philistines fled? Is that the last battle before this one with the Philistines?
That was the last one with the Philistines, correct, when they were routed. That's
okay.
Right.
Okay, so obviously Goliath was not there.
Says who?
Me.
Oh. Okay. Well, then it's obvious to you.
I mean, if he instilled such fear all of a sudden, I am presuming that he is new on the scene. And I always thought the Goliath, the gull part, was like a huge wave coming up and tending to completely overrun them like a tsunami, you know? And I just feel that the fear that it doesn't just say Shaul was afraid, it says they're all afraid, which leads me to believe that, number one, when he has to introduce himself, Anochi a Plishti, I am also a Plishti. You know, you never saw me before, maybe, but I'm one of them and I'm fighting with them. I don't know if he came from the Rafim or where he came from or if he was born a Plishti. But somehow or another, I feel that this is an element that the Plishtim brought in to terrorize Israel after their last defeat, and that he could summon, and deliberately, they don't want to fight Israel again because they're not sure, because they were so victorious and tricked them the last time. But bringing a guy who's only going to fight one man, that's the object, could terrorize who's going to volunteer, who wants to do this. Yes. The obvious person to do it is Shaul, or maybe send his son Yonatan. But this man is obviously terrorizing them. That this is a new dimension to a previous enemy that they have never seen before. So I have never thought that he was present in all the battles, the previous battles they had with Christine. That's just my feeling anyway.
So, no, it's look, I understand the motivation for saying it. And I think that motivation is what drives the Medrash to say, no, he has to have been here, because the text doesn't introduce him as somebody new. The text does not say, here's what was different this time, or this fellow came out of nowhere. Like, you don't get the introduction we would have expected. But I definitely understand why you could read the story that way. and why that would create new intimidation, and why that would motivate the Plishtim to attack. I can't, you know, I can't disprove what you're saying.
No.
You know? I think it's definitely an approach. Claudette.
It's possible that he was around in the war before, but the difference here is leadership. If the leadership is weak, everybody is in fear. And I think because Saul, Shul was so weak at this point, they felt that they could intimidate everyone else because the people were, their giant, their tall king was weak.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what you're seeing in the commentators, that this is a product of Shaul's deterioration. You definitely are, you know, seeing that highlighted here. I would agree with that point. Janine, you want to say?
No? Sorry, no, my phone rang. I'm sorry.
Okay. Etty.
I am with Leona because why before they were not afraid of him, and all of a sudden he's terrorizing them. If he was part of the wars before, he may have killed millions of them because he's stronger than all of them.
Well, in the types of wars that they fought, I'm not sure that a single powerful warrior is that meaningful. I'm not so sure. Meaning you mob him, you know? Look, David manages to kill him, but...
We had Shimshon, and the Plishtim were afraid of Shimshon until they managed to get Delilah to trick him.
It's an interesting point.
He was a big man, and he was a strong man, and, he got him at the end. It was a one-man show at the end, too.
Right. I mean, there it's unique in the sense that Shimshon is never presented as being particularly strong. It's always the Ruach Elohim that does it, as opposed to muscles, right? Which is why when it says the Spirit of Hashem leaves him, suddenly he's weak. It's worth noting, we picture Shimshon as muscle-bound. The text does not.
Why? When he kills everybody with a single...
Yeah, but it's always Ruach Elohim that's doing it, and that's also how when he becomes weak, when they cut his hair. He does not become weak because his hair is cut. The text is very clear about that. It's God leaving him, and his strength comes back, not because his hair grows, but because he prays to God, and God says, okay, one more time.
But to the other people, he looks strong. They don't know about Ruach Elohim.
Who says? Because they saw the movie? Okay. So what we've seen so far is that the Plishtim are attacking soon after their recent defeat. Maybe Goliath is what drives them forward because he's new, maybe. It seems to me, based on what we've seen, that the commentators believe that they are aware of Shaul's deterioration, and that's what enables it. Goliath challenges Shaul personally, and perhaps God and the nation, to a duel. And he is not only the embodiment of the Philistines, but the opposite of David. A physically intimidating, well-armed, well-armored blasphemer who is descended from Arpah, the counterpart of Ruth. That's what we've seen. You know, great. Now my signal is working when we got 5 minutes to go. Okay. So, what we're going to see next is an introduction to David and his family again. But David is not going to be at the battlefield. He's going to be at home. Take a look at chapter 17, sentences 12 to 14, please. V'David ben Ish Ephrasi hazeh mibeis lechem Yehuda ushmo Yishai. And David is the son of this man of Ephrat from Beit Lechem Yehuda. Remember that Ephrat and Beit Lechem are the same place. Back when Yaakov buries Rachel, like Barah Hashem, Bederech Ephrat, he Beit Lechem. Ephrat and Beit Lechem are the same place. So David is from Beit Lechem in Yehuda. You may recall that there's another Beit Lechem in Zvulun that came up in Shoftim. Ushmo Yishai, his father's name is Yishai. Veloshmo Navanim, and he has 8 sons. And we've talked about whether he has 8 sons or 7 sons. We're not doing that right now. Ve'ha'ish b'imei Sha'ul zaken baba anashim. And Yishai is already old. And baba anashim, which either means, again, aged, or he is respected. He travels and there is an entourage that follows him. He speaks and there's a group that listens to him. Vayelchu shloshes b'nei Yishai ha'gedolim. Yishai's three oldest sons. Halchu acharei Sha'ul la'milchama. Went after Sha'ul to war. V'shem shloshes banav asher halchu b'milchama. And the names of his three sons who went to war were Eliav ha'bechor. U'mishneu Avinadav. Vashlishi Shama. Eliav, Avinadav, Shama. Shama may be the one who we read before as Shim'i, when we were talking about the warriors. And we mentioned the Yonatan, the son of Shim'i, brother of Shaul. So that's that may be this Shama. V'David hu akatan, and David is the youngest. U'shlosha gedolim halchu acharei Shaul. The three older ones are the ones who went with Shaul to war.
Why does it sound as if we've never met these people?
Yeah, we know all of them. Why is this here? That's one question you have to ask. What else do you have to ask?
When we told their all the names of David's brothers earlier, we just told one after the other came.
So we definitely had Eliav, right? Eliav was the oldest one and the one he was really impressed with. And then he calls Avinadav. We saw Avinadav and we saw Shama. Three for three.
But David's also introduced, like, hey, we just have this whole thing about him being the son of Yishai, and Shmuel wasn't happy.
This is the news.
He'd already been crowned.
Where was he? Why wasn't he there? Well, he's the youngest.
Right, so this is another question.
But he's the king, and they know it, right? The brothers know. The family? Does the family?
The family knows. The family is aware.
King, and he's been playing music for the king, for Shaul. Why is he not with the brothers at this point?
How old is he?
Not to mention, he's an accomplished soldier.
Right.
Chapter 16, sentence 18, he's Gibor Chayil. He's a warrior. Why are you hiding your best guy? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, the brother, could jealousy be playing like Joseph's story?
Yes,
it could.
Yeah.
Definitely a possibility. Not to mention, though, just one other thing that I'm not to mentioning, but I'm going to mention it. David is going to show up at the battlefield. He's going to have an errand that's going to bring him there. And he's going to hear people talking about Goliath. You were hanging out in the king's palace. Why did you not know about Goliath? How could you not know about Goliath?
Good.
So the question is, where is David and when is he there? That's the that's one of the things we're going to have to address. We have these big questions that we have to deal with. I highly recommend, since we're not having a class until the 15th, if you take a look at the source sheet, for those who want to do some advanced reading, source number 12, I refer you to an article from Dr. Ruth Walfish. It's in Hebrew. Iyun Chadash B'Shmuel Aleph Ted Zayin Yud Zayin. It's from the journal Megadim, and it's available online. If you just put that title into Google, you will find it. I think I got to it via hatanach.com. I think that was how I found it. But she has a very, very good read of what's going on here, and that's going to form the basis of some of what I'm going to say when we pick up with this. So,
can you send us that in an email?
Oh, send you the article?
It doesn't have to be the article; just her name and the.
Well, the truth is, I could. There's no reason not to. Maybe I'll do that, and I'll send you the Rabbi Zak article also. But then what you can't do is use that during the class to just predict everything I'm about to say. That's cheating.
Okay. So should we wait?
You should read it. You should learn Torah. It's a good thing. So, all right. I apologize again for the signal issues. I think I know what was causing it. I'm in a space here. We're in the Clinton Park Shul these days. And I think that I was in a space with four other people on Zooms. I think that's what did it.
I'll do it.
But God willing, we'll be better for our next class, and this won't be an issue. So I wish everybody...